do some practical work here. This can be higher. Some fans can be on. If we skip the one above my head, that's nice, but not that everyone should have to suffer. I think some more fans would be good. Unless you want AC. No, you don't like AC. Good. Okay. In the back row, you want to have some? Okay, it's all happening. And the cell phones are all off, yes? And the pocket cameras are going to stay in the pockets? Okay.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Shamadvam mama dharma dharatmyam. Sadhavo dina vatsalaha. Ityuktvashu mukha padau. Syala sasror atagrahi.
My dear sister and brother-in-law, please be merciful to such a poor-hearted person as me, since both of you are saintly persons. Please excuse my atrocities. Having said this, Kamsa fell at the feet of Vasudeva and Devaki, his eyes full of tears of regret. Purport. Although Kamsa had spoken very nicely on the subject of real knowledge, his past deeds were abominable and atrocious, and therefore he further begged forgiveness from his sister and brother-in-law by falling at their feet and admitting that he was a most sinful person.
Ityukt vashu mukha padau syala svasura atagrihit.
Kshamadvam, asking forgiveness. Any civilized person, when he commits some wrong to others, especially some serious wrong, should ask forgiveness. This is civilized life. Anyone who just abuses others and carries on is a brute. He's a lout. The word in English is a lout. It means an uncultured, like a ruffian. He's got his own agenda and everybody else can go to hell. And if you got bruised, or that's too bad. But any civilized person, cultured person, if he commits some wrong to others, begs forgiveness. And especially among the Vaishnavas, it's very much a part of the culture. Because Vaishnavas, first of all, are the most cultured human beings. And particularly if they offend another Vaishnava, they're very careful, very conscious that the Vaishnavas are representatives of Vishnu. The Vaishnavas are the representatives of the Lord. Sadhava hridayam mayam, sadhava hridayam tvaham. The Lord is in the heart of the devotee, and therefore the devotee is in the heart of the Lord. They don't know anyone but Krishna, and therefore Krishna says, I don't know anyone else but them. So the Vaishnavas particularly are very much afraid of committing any offense to the Vaishnava. The Lord can tolerate offenses to himself, but it's very difficult for him to tolerate offenses to his devotee. Just as one may tolerate sun beating down on his head, but sun on your feet, hot sand, is intolerable. So the devotees are at the lotus feet of the Lord, and therefore the Lord finds it very difficult to tolerate offenses to his devotees. So the Vaishnavas are particularly careful not to offend a devotee. And even if he thinks he may have committed some offense, then he's very quick to offer, to beg, please forgive me, please forgive me. But even apart from the Vaishnavas, this is the standard in cultured human society. If we offend someone, then we beg forgiveness. Now in Kali Yuga, as things have degraded, sometimes forgiveness is requested, but something like this. If some person or some committee offends someone very grievously, if they really mistreat him, then they'll write something like, if there may have been anything in our behavior that was improper, then please forgive us. If there may have been anything in our behavior that was improper, please forgive us. To which an appropriate answer might be, if that's any kind of a decent apology, I forgive you. Or in Kali Yuga also, people, if they admit some wrongdoing or some, it's embezzlement or whatever, then if they confess, they say something like, I regret any appearance of impropriety. Right? I regret any appearance of impropriety that may have occurred. I don't regret doing the thing. I regret that it appeared to be, to some people, improper. In this way, one speaks out of both sides of his mouth at once and offers what they call in American English a mealy-mouthed apology. It means an equivocal, essentially meaningless apology, one that you couldn't be pinned down for. No, I never said I did anything wrong. But if I did anything wrong, this is Kali Yuga. Integrity is difficult to find. But in civilized human culture, if someone commits some wrong, and especially serious wrong, then he accepts the responsibility. I did something very wrong. I did something very wrong. Please forgive me. So Kamsa is approaching Vasudeva and Devaki. Shamadvam mamadharatmya. My atrocious behavior. Not I regret if some other members of my administration might have in some way, if my guards mistreated you or something, I didn't really know. No, none of this rubbish. Mama Dharatmya, I accept responsibility. It was my wrongdoing. Mama Dharatmyam Sadavo. Duratma, and you're Sadhavatma, so please forgive me. I'm a mean, hard-hearted person, but you're saintly persons. So please be kind to me. Dinavatsala. You're very kind, because you're saintly persons, you're very kind to those who are dina, those who have fallen. So please forgive me. Ityutva. In this way, Kamsa spoke. Ashrumukha, with tears in his eyes. Not just having as a secretary issue an official apology, but with tears in his eyes, please forgive me, please forgive me. Pado, agrahi, grabbing the feet of his brother-in-law and sister, please forgive me, please forgive me, please forgive me. In this way, he begged apologies for his atrocious activities. After hearing from the Durga Devi, he was pragmatically acting in killing all of the sons of his brother and sister-in-law, and trying to kill the daughter. He was acting pragmatically. Not according to Shastra. According to Shastra, you should never act like that, so atrociously. But the demons don't follow Shastra. That's the specific qualification of the demons, that they act according to their own whims, not according to Shastra. Or you can say, because whim just sounds like some idea that came into my head, but they act according to their own judgment. Well, on the one side, if I do this, I'll get this, and I stand to lose that. And if I do something else, plan B, then I'll gain this, but it'll have that repercussion. So everything is judged in terms of cost-benefit analysis. You know, what's in it for me, or what's in it for us? What will be, by which plan will we get the most mileage? Which will work better? That's the way we judge things. And whether or not it's according to Shastra, oh, the hell with that. That's not what concerns us here. We're interested in whether it works. Is it a feasible plan? Is it an intelligent plan? If it's an intelligent plan and it seems like it works and we stand to benefit more than we stand to lose, let's do it. And whether or not you're acting totally against the injunctions of Shastra is not a question that's in the picture. Whereas the devotees follow Shastra. Tasmat Shastra Pramanam Te Karya Karya Vivastito. The demons don't actually know what to do and what not to do, what's to be done and what's not to be done. Pravrittim cha navrittim cha jana navidurasura. Because they don't follow the Shastra. How will they know? But the devotees accept Shastra as the evidence of what's to be done and not to be done. Tasmat shastra pramanam te karya karya vyavastito. Shastra gyatva vidhanoktam. Karma kartum iharsi. They do what is their duty. Not what seems like it'll work or seems like it'll be most beneficial to them or most pleasing to them. The whole first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, not the whole first chapter, but Arjuna's arguments in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita are all based on cost-benefit analysis. Let's see. Natrashreyo nupashyami. I don't see any long-term benefit from killing my kinsman. Nakangche vijayam Krishna natcharaj. I don't want this kind of happiness. Kim bhogar jivitainava. What boga will we get out of this? What enjoyment? We're going to kill so many relatives. Etan nahantam ichchami. I don't want to do this. Ka priti syaj janardana. What pleasure will we get from killing our kinsmen? Papam eva shreyed. We'll get sinful reactions. Svajanam hi katam hatva sukhina syadama. What happiness, again, what happiness will we get from this? Then on and on he goes with that sort of argument. It's all based on cost-benefit. What I like, what will keep me out of trouble, what will be beneficial for me, what will be pleasing for me, and not what Krishna wants us to do, what Krishna orders us to do, what our duty is to do. That's to the side. But the Vedic culture means that I have to act not according to what I like or don't like, not according to what seems like it will benefit me or not benefit me, but according to the directions of Krishna. According to the direction of Shastra, according to the direction of Krishna. And sometimes it may be pleasing to me, sometimes it may not be pleasing to me. Maharaj Shibi offered that I'll give an equivalent amount of flesh from my body to this eagle who's chasing you. Some eagle was chasing a pigeon. Pigeon took shelter of Maharaj Shibi. So Shibi thought, I'm the king. I have to give him protection. He's taken shelter of me. Then the eagle complained, he's my food. You can't take away my food. Then Shibi Maharaj said, all right, I'll give you an equal amount of flesh from my own body. Not likely to be something that he thought would be fun. But he agreed. So he put the pigeon on the scale and some weights on the other side, but the pigeon kept getting heavier and heavier. And so finally Shibi Maharaj said, all right, put my whole body on the scale. Because I've given my word, and it's my duty. Arjuna, then the pigeon and the eagle disclosed that actually we're such and such demigods. We were just wanted to show your glories. Now Arjuna, the same thing. In the beginning, I don't like it. All trouble, sin will come to me. What pleasure will we get? And at the end, karishyeva chanam tava. Whatever you tell me to do, I'll do it. Because that's our duty. Finally, the duty of the human being is to satisfy Krishna. And one satisfies Krishna by following Krishna's instructions. For some very elevated souls, Krishna speaks to them from within the heart and says, do this, do that. For the rest of us, that means the words of Shastra, the words of the spiritual master, the words of enlightened persons. And generally, we find that even the very advanced devotees who have Krishna speaking within their hearts, they also follow Shastra, saintly persons. So one has to know what is to be done and what is not to be done, and one has to perform one's duty, Krishna says, without considering loss or gain, happiness or distress. Not that I go through life always looking, what's in it for me? What's in it for me? What's in it for me? It's my duty. That's a different way of thinking. Materialistic way of thinking is, what's in it for me? And the dharmic way of thinking is, what is my duty? Like a soldier. A soldier can't, when he goes out to the front, can't think, what's in it for me? What may be in it for you is to have your head shot off. Or a policeman, if he's some criminals are there, he's chasing them, if he starts to think, wait a second, what's in it for me? If I lose my life, what will happen to my family? I'm a better man than he is, better that I should live and he should, that he, you know, he should live and I should live, then I should die and he should die, or whatever. He can't think that way. He has to think, it's my duty. The fireman, the policeman, the soldier, the parents can't think. Now they think that, damn it, I'm pregnant. And then the cost-benefit analysis. And then kill it. And there'll be others who will sympathize. Yes, by cost, you stand to lose more than you stand to gain. So you're doing the right thing, sweetheart. So the Shastra says, don't live just by cost-benefit analysis. One has to live according to principles. One has to act according to principles. And those principles are enunciated by Krishna. Dharmam hi sakshat bhagavat pranita. So Kamsa, at this point, is showing very good behavior. He's falling down at the feet of his sister and brother-in-law. He's admitting that you're great saintly persons and I've committed such atrocious activities toward you. He's begging for forgiveness. He has tears in his eyes. Seems very, very good. But the problem is, yas yasti bhaktir bhagavat jakinchana sarvair gunais tatra samasate sura harava bhaktasya kuto madguna manoratena asati dhavatobihi. Sometimes those who are the devotees of the Lord always have good qualities because they're connected with the devotees are connected with the Lord. So it's constitutional for them. It's natural for them. It's what a devotee is. He's a good person because he's connected to the all-good person. But abhaktasya, harava bhaktasya, those who are not devotees of the Lord, may superficially or circumstantially or from time to time shows some very good qualities. But kuto mahadguna, what good qualities do they actually have? Mano ratena sati dhavato mahi. They're how are they situated? The devotee is situated in Krishna consciousness. He's traveling in the vehicle of Krishna consciousness. And the non-devotees are traveling in the vehicle of their polluted minds. Manorat, the chariot of the mind. And the mind is asati, impure, contaminated. Asati, simply concerned with that which is impermanent. Unchaste, the mind is a whore. Asati, meaningless. No permanent value is there. But the mind is going this way, going that way, going this way, going that way. Now, sometimes the mind thinks, I've done such a terrible thing. I'm such a sinful person. I've committed such atrocious behavior toward these saintly people. I'll burn in hell for millions of years for my sins. And the next minute he's thinking, the kid's still alive somewhere. He's escaped. I killed the wrong ones, but I can still get him. I've got some demonic friends who are up to it. I can send them to Vrindavan. Or when he hears that different demigods are taking birth in the Yadudana, I can lock them up again. That treacherous sister and brother-in-law of mine, I can throw him back in prison. Manoratayanasati tavatobhi. He's running on the chariot of the mind. This is the nature of the mind. One moment it's thinking, go this way. The next moment he's thinking, go that way. Next minute, one moment he's thinking, better to live like a saint. The next minute he's thinking, but there's sense gratification. Blue, 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 blue. Flip flop, flip flop. What is that? Sankalpa vikalpa, sankalpa vikalpa. Accepting and rejecting, accepting and rejecting. And on what principle is he accepting and rejecting? The way the wind blows. You can never know which way these people are going to go. Because asati, it's not permanent. They're not fixed. They're banged around, battered around by the modes of material nature. They're playthings of the three modes of material nature. They've surrendered to the material nature. Prakritim mohanim shataha. What is it? Rakshasim asarim chaiva prakritim mohanim shritaha. They've taken shelter of the bewildering illusory energy. So that bewildering illusory energy through her three modes can one minute say do this, next minute say do that. Just bang them around, toss them around like child's toys. Therefore, Vasudev knew that I can't trust this man. He, after the first child, no, you can take him back, that's all right, it's only the eighth child. So Vasudev accepted, but he knew that that's only for this moment. The next moment he can change his mind. Because that's the kind of person he is. Harava bhaktasya kuto mahadguna. Because he's not fixed in Krishna consciousness. what good qualities can we expect? We can expect something sometimes. Especially when it looks good in cost-benefit analysis. When, as a politician, if I appear contrite and humble, if that'll boost my scores, then I'll come on television and be contrite and humble, because I know that it'll work in my favor. So why not? If I know that a constituency that matters to me can be won over to my side if I act this way or that way, I act this way or that way. I'll sacrifice principles for a constituency. This is material life. But the devotee, he acts according to what will satisfy Krishna. Haridas Thakur, they was arrested by the Muslim ruler. You've abandoned your religion and you're chanting this other thing. I'll have you beaten, I'll have you killed. You give this up, come back to the real thing. Haridas Thakur said, you do what you want, I'll never give up chanting Hare Krishna. Okay, we'll stop here. Other questions? Yes? Is that a question way in the back? Or no?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for a very wonderful class. Maharaj, I wanted to check, we also beg forgiveness. However, sometimes I fall short of again be able to live up to the standard. So in that situation, have I not really begged forgiveness, or it was like weakness of heart, which just again...
Definitely it's weakness of heart. I do something and then I beg forgiveness and then I do it again. What is it if it's not weakness of heart? But at least the devotee, if he has weakness of heart, he thinks, I have weakness of heart, I should admit it, I should purify my heart, I should get some strength of heart. So he's practicing. He's practicing. If he does something, he begs forgiveness. If he does it again, maybe he has to ask 100 times, I've done it again. But still he's thinking, at least he's reached the first step, it's not good. Not, well, you deserved it anyway. You're not trying to justify, well, under the circumstances you have to understand that, well, at least first thing is he admits it. And the next thing is that he regrets it. And because he regrets it, his heart becomes purified. And if he's serious and sincere, then kshipram bhavati dharmatma. Very quickly he'll come to the standard. If he's doing it and regretting and doing and regretting and doing and regretting, after a while we have to wonder, you know, what is with this guy? Is he serious? After a while, it becomes a joke. Sin and confess, sin and confess. If Prabhupada said that if you do something, I'll forgive you. If you do it again, I'll forgive you. But But if you do it again and again, it's a joke. So it shouldn't just be another sort of a device that, yes, I commit mistakes, but then I always ask forgiveness. And so it's sort of like an acceptable platform. This is what I do. I make mistakes. I do nasty things to people. But then I always ask forgiveness. And so that's like, okay. That's not the standard. Yes? PJ?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Why Krishna consciousness life is full of offenses?
Say it again.
Why Krishna consciousness life is full of offenses?
I missed it. Krishna conscious life is full of offenses. No, Krishna conscious life is free from all offenses. It's this other life which is full of offenses, and that's the life that we're trying to leave behind. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, you told that in this Kali Yuga we ask forgiveness, but we ask forgiveness for what we may have committed, but we don't ask direct that we have done this. Maharaj, sometimes we commit many times mistake, but we don't understand and...
That's good. That's a different thing. A person tries to do everything very nicely, but then at the end he says, if I committed any offenses, that's also very cultured. He's done everything very nicely, but then at the end he says, if I committed any offenses, please forgive me. He's thinking, he knows that as much as I may try to do something nice, maybe I may make some mistakes. So even if he doesn't know of any mistake he may have done, still he asks, if I committed any offense, please forgive me. That's a different thing. But the case I'm talking about, he knows. I punched you in the face and then say, if anything happened that may have offended you,
about the mind, Maharaj, you were saying it's like the wind, no. So I think...
Two things. Speak into the microphone.
Okay, yes. Maharaj, sorry.
Probably a little slower would help me.
About the mind, Maharaj, you were saying it's like the wind. So I'm sometimes put off that I'll never be able to get over this whims of the mind. The thought just comes and I don't know from where it comes. The mind is very uncontrollable.
That's the nature of the mind. The mind is chanchala, Astir, Pramati, Balavad, Krishna, Arjuna told to Krishna that if I try to control the mind, where's the hope? Because the mind is crazy, the mind is determined, the mind is fickle, the mind is unsteady. But Krishna said, Asamshayam Mahabaho, that's a fact, no doubt about it. Mano Dur Nigraham Chalam. The mind is always moving around this way and that way. But abhyasena tu kontaya vairagyena chagriyate. It is possible to control the mind by suitable practice and by detachment. In previous age, the suitable practice was Ashtanga Yoga or other systems. In Kali Yuga, the suitable practice is chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So if we fill the mind with this Maha Mantra, then there's no space left for other things. That's our program. unwanted things. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Raj, sometime like you told about mind sometime is thinking good and other time it thinks bad. So sometime we hear the lectures, like we have to be in the mood of servant of servant. And we develop that mood, ki, yes, I am the servant of all the devotees. And all devotees are my master. But now we are thinking this. And just after 1 hour, we start thinking, we start competing with devotees, we start criticizing devotee. So when we are thinking of actually that I am the servant of all the devotees, is it the trick of mind that I am thinking? Or actually I've developed that quality of
being the servant? No, it's good. We're practicing.
But why does it happen? Because now we are thinking that I am the servant of all the devotees. At other moment, I am started criticizing them.
Because we're contaminated, but we have to practice so that we can become purified.
So it may also happen that I'm
just
thinking,
even like a horse or an ox. You know, you're training it, and it walks around in the circle and it responds to your commands. And it's doing everything nicely, and then all of a sudden it's going this way and that way. And then it again walks nicely, and then again. But after some time, proper training, then it starts to know that I should just do this, and then it's all right. So it's training. The mind, we know, is by nature restless, unsteady. Savai mana Krishna padada vindya. But we have to practice to fix the mind on Krishna. That's very difficult. Mind is going here and there. Therefore, by sound. The sound is very powerful. Krishna is all powerful. He's present in the transcendental sound. So by constant practice, satatam kirti anto mam, always chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. Gradually we'll come to that point. And it's understood that it's not that I chant Hare Krishna and then from now on I'm perfect. It's practice. From one point of view, what is practice? Practice is failing again and again. It's falling short again and again. Otherwise, what's the meaning of practice? When you learn to ride a bicycle, you have to practice. What's the practice? Falling off your bike again and again when you're a child. But then after a while you get it right and then you're driving nicely. Practicing, you learn to read by practice. And at the beginning you B, no, that's a D. D, no, that's a B. So we make so many mistakes again and again, but because we're practicing, then after a while we read very nicely. So, abhyasena tu kaunteya vairagyena jagrite. By practice of chanting this Maha Mantra and associating with the devotees, hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, by all of these practices that are recommended in the Krishna consciousness movement, we become purified. And we see that devotees who accept this practice, they become different. They become saintly. Yes.
Maharaj, sometimes mind gives thoughts, but we have not read all the scriptures. How do you know that, whether it is a trick of mind or actually...
You may not have read all the scriptures. Read Bhagavad Gita. All the scriptures, you don't have enough time, enough lifetimes. Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Upanishado Gavo, the essence of the Upanishads is present in Bhagavad Gita. You read Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, teachings of Lord Chaitanya, Nectar of Devotion, Krishna book. You don't have to read so many books. We only have a few books. But if you don't know, then you can ask. I don't know what to do, what not to do, then I approach a superior person. What is my duty? And if he's actually superior, he'll say, according to Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Nectar of Devotion, teachings of then this is what you should do. Yes.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you. Microphone rules. Yes.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Maharaj, for the very enlivening class. I had a doubt that the forgiveness giving is given a very importance in Krishna consciousness. But improving ourselves also has some importance.
Improving now, has importance.
Improving, yes. So now I may commit offenses, but I have a feeling that, you know, I committed offenses, so I should improve myself. But on the other hand, I feel that, you know, what is the need of asking forgiveness? Because the thing is, I should improve myself. And I take care that the next time I should not commit it. And it also
happens... That's if it's your own business. If you're the only person involved, then all you have to do is improve. You don't have to ask anyone's forgiveness.
Is that okay? Or...
Yeah, but when is no one else involved?
But it's always somebody's involved.
Always somebody's involved. So, it's...
And it also happens that I may ask forgiveness and that person forgives me, but I take it so lightly that, you know, I take care with that person, but it doesn't happen with the other persons. So I may commit the same thing with other persons.
Yeah, that's the problem. There's always someone involved, either this person or that person. Finally, Krishna, the Supreme Person, he's always involved. No, serious point. Krishna's always involved. So... asking forgiveness, but that's not, as you say, it's the asking forgiveness is not everything. Along with asking forgiveness, there should be the determination to improve. Otherwise, as Srila Prabhupada said, he's not a high-grade devotee. Kshipram bhavati dharma. It is expected that because he's serious, he'll correct his bad behavior. It may not happen instantly, that's understood, but if he's serious, he tries to change.
Many times happens that we used to ask.
Good, he's.
Raj, many times happens that we don't want to ask forgiveness, but still we ask mechanically. So is it also an offense?
Well, it doesn't count for very much, does it? If it's superficial mechanicals. No, sorry. Sorry. You know, I push my way through the queue, and along the way, sorry, sorry. Everyone understands I'm not the least bit sorry. As long as I'm moving forward, I'm happy. So it doesn't count for very much. And people may be even more offended, actually. Sometimes our apologies are more offensive than the offense. You know, after all the things that he did to me, he had the nerve to send me a letter saying, if anything happened that, you know, was unfortunate, then, you know, send me a letter like that. I'll become more angry. So apologies should be sincere. Even Kamsa apologized, took the responsibility, apologized with apparent sincerity, humbled himself. So we should try to come at least to Kamsa's standard. But the only difference should be that Kamsa was acting without Krishna consciousness. Therefore, manoratenasati dhavatobihi. And we should act in Krishna consciousness, then sarvayagunaistatra samasate sura, all the good qualities will automatically develop. That's the main thing. If we're always engaged in trying to serve Krishna and trying to serve the devotees, then the good qualities will come. Now, there's a time issue. Who are the time controllers? Shall we stop? 10 minutes more. Okay. Wherever the microphone is. Yes.
Maharaj, sometimes in hostel, our classmates, when they come to know that we worship Radha Krishna, we worship Radha and Krishna,
yes.
They sometimes make fun of us and say some things that are not good for Radha and Krishna. And then when we really get angry, they just say that, please forgive us, we didn't mean that or something. But they really meant that they said. So what should we actually do at that time?
You might explain to them that we tend to see things according to our own mentality. Atmavan manyate jagat. A lusty man thinks that everyone else is lusty. A greedy man thinks everyone else is greedy. A politician thinks that everyone else thinks politically. So, such mundane-minded hostel dwellers, because they're very much interested in sex, think that Krishna is a similar person who's just interested in sex. They don't get it. The Naham Prakasha Sarvasya Yogamaya Samavrita, they're covered by the illusory energy of the Lord. Because they don't understand. First thing is, who is Krishna? You can ask them, what is your understanding? All right, Krishna's playing with Radha, blah, blah, blah. Who's Krishna? Do you know who Krishna is? Because as soon as you know who Krishna is, you can't think that way. Krishna is Purushottama. He's transcendental to all the laws of material. Maya Jakshena, the laws of material energy that are impelling people toward lustful activities, are under Krishna's control. Krishna's not under their control. So their problem is they don't understand Krishna. They think Krishna is an ordinary boy, Radharani is an ordinary girl. And so their activities must be like our activities. Seeing everything in terms of their own situation. Parampava majanata. They don't know Krishna's transcendental nature. If Krishna is an ordinary boy, and his activities with Radharani are ordinary boy-girl activities, why was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu worshipping them? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was such a strict sannyasi that one of his sannyasi followers one time glanced at a woman with some lustful mood, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu kicked him out. His female admirers would have to offer obeisances from way off. So why would such a person be interested in, stardust boy-girl activities? Shukadeva Goswami is the reciter of Srimad Bhagavatam. What we know about the activities of Radha and Krishna starts with Srimad Bhagavatam. Shukadeva Goswami was so aloof from sex life. He was a 16-year-old boy. He was walking. He, as soon as he was born, he just took off, left home. Didn't even ask anyone, could I have a set of clothes? He didn't think about it. So he's walking naked through the countryside. And he came past this pool of water, and some ladies were bathing naked. And they saw him, and they didn't think twice about it. Because by seeing his face, they could understand. He's like a child. If some little child is mixing with the ladies while the ladies are dressing, the ladies don't think about it. Oh, wait a second. He's a child. Sukadeva Goswami was on that level of purity. The ladies didn't even think that we better cover ourselves. Some man is coming. It didn't even cross his mind, and they could understand that. His father was running after him, Vyasadev, and when he came, the ladies dressed themselves because he was a householder. Householders have to know the difference between male and female. Sukadeva Goswami was like, didn't even register the difference. How can such a person be interested in ordinary activities of boys and girls? He's speaking Srimad Bhagavatam, in which there's so much disparagement of the bodily concept of life. He says, anyone who thinks that this bag of mucus, bile, and air that he calls him is himself has the brain of an ass or a cow. So he says the materialistic men are wasting their lives during the night, sleeping and having sex, and during the day, where's money? How can that person, Sukadeva Goswami, be interested in reciting stories about what boys and girls do together in materialistic life? Now, your poor friends at the hostel haven't even gotten to the start. They don't understand who Krishna is, and therefore everything after that, they get wrong. 2 + 2 = 5, + 2 = 7. The rest of the column is going to be totally off. Here, read this book and then come back and let's talk about it. Okay.
Maharaj, thank you so much for a wonderful lecture. Maharaj, I have one question. Like sometimes we commit offense in our mind. You know? Mm-hmm. Sometimes we commit mistakes in our mind, offend somebody in our mind. So in that case, how to ask forgiveness?
Yeah, mental offenses, we may not ask forgiveness. We should just see that the mind is like this. And it should be punished. Mind should be beaten with a shoe or a broomstick. Otherwise, we'll be asking forgiveness at every third moment. People start saying, could you please stop asking me for forgiveness? People's inboxes start getting clogged with messages from you. I thought something bad, but please forgive me. So in the mind, these things may be there. And we should just think that we should notice that my mind is not what it should be. So let me chant Hare Krishna.
What happens that when we commit offense in mind, so slowly, slowly our consciousness or the perception towards that very person, it also gets affected to some extent.
Yeah.
Like that.
Therefore, I have one godbrother, before he does his puja, he thinks of all other godbrothers and devotees, long list, and thinks, have I offended this person? And thinks about the good qualities of that person. We should try to appreciate. That's a good remedy against offense. The mind is going on. The mind is like a self-appointed critic. The way critics are employed by newspapers and magazines to tell you what book is good and what book is, and find fault with this and that. The mind has been, even though it's not getting paid, it's a self-appointed critic, And its job is to say, well, you know, the trouble with Shamananda is blah, 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 blah. And the trouble with this person, okay, he's a nice devotee, but blah, 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 blah. That's the nature of the polluted mind, always to find fault. So an antidote is to try to appreciate the good qualities. When you start thinking about the good qualities of the devotees, then there's no limit to their good qualities. And your mind will be much happier also. The critic's job is not nearly as rewarding as the job of the person who appreciates and glorifies the devotee. So when the mind's engaged in appreciating the devotees, it will feel satisfaction. And when it's engaged in criticizing, it will feel pain. So we should try to appreciate the glories of the devotees. We have used up our 10 minutes. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Samaveta bhakta brinda ki jai. Gaur Premanande.